Morning, everyone. Today's Daf and Tzvachim is Ayin Tes. Wishing everyone an easy fast. We are on Ayin Chesem and Beis. And we're going to start today with the words Tanaihi. It's the Machlokas Tanaihim. What is the Machlokas Tanaihim? So you go back to the Mishnah, and we are started, as of yesterday, the topic of blood getting mixed together with blood. And classic topics in Ta'arovus of Min B'mino versus Min B'sheino Mino. And another really interesting topic known as Rowan. So let me just go over some basic background information. A lot of it we went over yesterday, but let's go back over it again. And also, Rabbi Yehuda sheet of Min B'mino and Abatel. But first and foremost, we learned yesterday in the Mishnah that when bloods get mixed together, and you want to do the mitzvah of Zrikas Adam, you want to sprinkle the blood on the mizbech, so you need to know that you have blood. So how do I know that if I have a solution of blood and water, that solution is considered blood? So the Mishnah gives us a really simple formula, and that is that if there's maradam, as long as you have still the appearance of blood, it has a hue of blood, a red hue to it, so then it's going to be good for Zrikas Adam. So appearance, as long as you have an appearance, that would be fine. So says the Mishnah. What if the blood gets mixed together with something like wine? So when it gets mixed together with something like wine, so now, red wine, so now this is a solution of what's called min b'mino. It's a tarovus of min b'mino. And so what do we say at that point in time? So the Mishnah says that we employ a concept known as rowan. Rowan means that basically what we're going to do is we're going to take out the wine, the red wine, and we're going to substitute it with water. We're not actually going to do that, but it means to say that if we were to do that, so then would it have an appearance of blood? And obviously that would represent the leniency. In other words, over there, using the concept, the principle of Rowan would now allow us to say that, look, obviously we're never going to be able to detect the red of the blood because it's mixed together with the red of a wine. But once we allow ourselves to look at the red wine and substitute it with a clear liquid, so then that would allow us to be even more lenient. And even if I have less of the blood mixed in with this concentration, with this solution, so then I'd be allowed to use it. That's what we learned back in the Mishnah. And we also learned in the Mishnah that Rav Yehuda says that when bloods get mixed together or anything of similar nature, or the min b'mino, so Rav Yehuda says it's eino batel, it's not subject to bittul. Which we're not going to be discussing in any great detail, Shitas Rabbi Yehuda, but it will come up again later on this morning. So it's a good review of his position. When we have, and we're going to see this later on as well, when we have a tarovus, and whenever we have a mixture, so the first thing we need to address is whether it's min b'mino, min b'sheino mino. Is it a similar or dissimilar mixture? Is it something which is comparable one with another or not? Now, vis-a-vis, what are we talking about? So generally speaking, when we're talking about tarovus, we're talking about eating it. In other words, there's things that are mutter b'achila, things that are asar achila, get mixed together. And so therefore, generally speaking, we're talking about eating. Now, obviously, with the blood and the sprinkling of the blood, obviously, we're not talking about eating it. We're simply talking about sprinkling it. Okay, so if we're talking about a mixture of min b'mino, of like items getting mixed together, so then does bittul occur? So again, Rav Yehuda will say bittul never occurs. But short of Rav Yehuda Shita, the position is that when it comes to min b'mino, when it comes to similar mixtures getting mixed up together, so we may, in fact, employ the concept of Rowan, which we'll see later on. That's going to be subject to Machlokas Tanaim. But if we don't apply the principle of Rowan, so when is Bittul going to take place? The answer is very simple. Rove. You need a majority. As long as you have a majority of that which is permitted over that which is prohibited, in a case of Min B'mino, so then you're going to have Bittul. If it's Min B'she'eno Mino, if it's dissimilar, so now you have to address the fact that right now the tastes are combating one another. One is infusing a taste into the other. So when is bittul going to occur? So bittul is going to occur when you no longer can taste the forbidden item. So when we talk about min b'sheino mino, so it's bitam. In other words, you have to have enough of a mixture so that I can no longer taste that which is prohibited. Now, generally speaking, in today's daf, you're not going to hear this expression. But generally speaking, we say shishim. In other words, the ratio of 1 to 60 is enough to negate the test. That's not always true. In other words, you think about your spices. In other words, you put a spice into any food, and you're putting it at much less than a ratio of 1 to 60, and meanwhile, you can taste the spices. So obviously, it's not always true, but generally speaking, when it comes to food, the general ratio is 1 to 60. Okay. That is min b'mino versus min b'sheino mino. And then there's this idea, there's this concept called rowan, which means that if, even in the case of min b'mino, if it's like, can I sub out one for something which is dissimilar? Do I have that ability? Do I have that? That possibility? So the Gemara now is going to point out, as I pointed out yesterday, tonight it's a machlokas tonight. So we are in Ein Ches Amud Beis, and we're going to be starting right here in the halfway at the halfway point of the daf, where it's the last three words in the line, where the Gemara now is going to express that this is a machlokas tonight, whether or not one will employ the principle of rowan. So the Gemara starts off. The Tanya will learn from the following brisa. I have a bucket. The bucket is tamei, and I need to tovel the bucket in the mikvah in order for it to be a successful tefillah of the bucket in the mikvah. So what the bucket must be is totally immersed in the mikvah, where the mikvah water is going to be hitting every part of the bucket, both outside and inside. The bucket right now has a liquid inside of it. What the first example over here in the brisa is yain lavan o chalav. Either it's white wine or it's milk, and I tovel it in the mikvah. Okay, so before I go further in the brisa, let's make one point very clear. Let's say it was water that was in the bucket before I told them the mikvah. So if it was water in the bucket, actually that'd be great. Why? Because we have a concept when toveling something in the mikvah, a concept known as hashaka. Hashaka literally means to make contact or to kiss. And then what happens is that if when I tovel the bucket in the water, and the mikvah water now makes contact with the water inside the bucket, if it were water, so then what happens is that water basically now is it's like plugging into a socket. That water in the mikveh now is considered mikveh water, and that's going to be successful tefillah, and that would be great. But that's if it was water inside. Over here, we're not talking about it was water inside. The only time that we're going to use the principle of hashaka is only when it's water. Although I know in just a minute I'm going to stretch it out just a little bit. The Gemara is going to. But right now, hashaka only works by water. Over here, the liquids that are found inside are either white wine or milk. So hashaka doesn't work by these liquids. Okay, now as far as min bimino versus min b'sheino mino, the Gemara is going to consider this as min bimino as it relates to water. Now, obviously, they don't taste the same. But over here, taste is not the guideline. Over here, we're talking about the mitzvah of tefillah b'mikvah. So over here, we're just looking at its appearance. Now, still, I understand milk doesn't look like water, and white wine, you could probably differentiate between white wine and water, but because it's clear in coloration, so therefore the Gemara is going to regard it as min bimino. Okay? With all that stated, now we can see the brice inside. So, water now of the mikvah is going to go into the bucket. It's going to mix together with the milk or white wine that's in the bucket. Was the tefillah a successful tefillah or not? If there's more mikvah water than there is white wine, so in other words, if the white wine or milk only represents 49% of the content of that bucket, 51% of it is mikvah water, you have now a successful tefillah. Because that means to say, obviously, the outside of the bucket has made contact with the mikvah water. The inside of the bucket, because now the majority of it is mikvah water, so then you have tefillah. So what does Bryce is teaching us is that this is the case of min bimino, as I explained just a moment ago. And by min bimino, I need rov. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, ro noso ki ilu hu yayin adom, im dia marehu kasher, v'im lav pasal. And Rabbi Yehuda says, I agree it's min bimino, but I also subscribe to the principle of rowan. Rowan tells me that even though currently it's white wine, we're going to look at it as if it were red wine. Min b'she'eno mino. Now, over here, if it's red wine, so that means how much mikvah water do I need in order to create bittul? A lot more mikvah water. Because I need enough mikvah water to get into the bucket so that the red wine would totally fade and lose its coloration. So that means to say that according to Rav Yehuda, I only will have a kasher tefillah when there's only a small amount of the white wine, because we're looking at the white wine as if it's red wine. In other words, rowan, the principle of rowan. Okay, so you see over here in this brisa, very clearly this machlokus as to whether or not, when I have a min bimino scenario, do I use a concept of rowan? The Tanakhama says I don't, and Rav Yehuda says I do. Uriminu the Gemara says, okay, now let's compare what we just learned to the following brisa. Delishu male rokin, vit below, kilolo tavo. If I have a bucket and the content of the bucket is spit, saliva, and I tovel that bucket in the mikvah, it's ki'ilu lo tovel, that tefillah won't work. And as Rashi points out over here, it's not because, excuse me, Sorry about that. It is not because, says Rashi, that it has to do with bittul or no bittul. Rashi goes so far to say that even if I only had a little bit of saliva, in it, the saliva is such a viscous and thick liquid, what it presents is a chatzitza, a barrier between the mikvah and the actual bucket itself. So even though Rashi acknowledges, even though it talks about how it was filled with saliva, even if it wasn't filled with saliva, the tefillah wouldn't be good. It wouldn't be good tefillah. Me raglayin ro noso ki ilu hein mayin. What if the content of the bucket was urine? Urine is water. Now I said water is water just a moment ago, and I said we're going to stretch it out just a little bit. Urine is considered water. Because urine is regarded as water, so what do we have if I tovel my bucket with urine in it in the mikvah? And yes, that's right, don't tell the next person what just happened. But in other words, but what happens now? So now we employ the rule of Ashaka. Because since urine is regarded as water, so that means to say that all I need now is for the mikvah water to make contact with the urine inside, and you have a kosher mikvah. In other words, you don't need bittul at all because you have the principle of Ashaka. Malom mechatas. Okay, now, let's say the contents of the bucket was the mechata solution, meaning the ashes of the paraduma mixed together with mayim chayim, with spring water, and that's what I have. Now, if I didn't know any better, and you were to ask me, well, how do you view that halachically? So I'd say it's water, meaning obviously it's got ashes in it, but in other words, obviously it's mayim chayim, it's spring water. So if you would have asked me, I would have said it's water. Here's what we're gonna learn together in this braisa. Of course, physically it's water. Halachically, it's not going to be regarded as water. Rashi, if I may quote it, Rashi says, "Malo mechatas, hol vehein avatuma." Now we know the mechatas, the chatas water, it's really unusual. It's a source of tuma, and meanwhile, of course, as you sprinkle it on the person who is a tameh meis, so he's going to be purified, right? A bit difficult to understand. We all know. We've gone down this route of trying to understand the paraduma. So the Tanavatuma says Rashi v'chashi, excuse me, v'chashive, and Rashi points out that it's significant, mishum kedusha sayah, because of its sanctity, lo betelin ella beruba. So interestingly enough, it is considered a separate category from mikvah water. I'll say it again. Mechatas is considered a separate category from mikvah water. They're both water. It's water and water. Generally speaking, when we have such a scenario, we use the principle of Hashaka, but over here, the mikvah water and the mechatas are considered separate from one another. Categorically, what kind of tarovis is it? It's min bimino. Since it's min bimino, how much do I need in order to affect bittul? Rov. That's exactly what the Braisa says. Malo mechatas ad shiirbu amayim al mechatas. As long as I have more mikvah water than the mechata solution, so then there is going to, then the tefillah will be a good tefillah. Okay. Now, man shamaslei de islei rowan, Rabbi Yehuda. Now, we know, of course, that the one who subscribes to the rowan principle is Rabbi Yehuda, that we've already seen. The ketana de sagalei beruba. And the Gemara says, but of course, I'm confused over here, because we just learned in this last braisa that if I have min bimino of water and water, now again, mechatas water and the mikvah water. But because the mechatzis is so special and holy, so therefore it's its own separate category. But still, it's a case of min bimino. If I subscribe to Rowan, so that means to say that in a min bimino scenario, I look at it as if it's some other type, a dissimilar type, which obviously would mean that I need a lot more of the mikvah water in order to affect bittul. Why is Rabbi Yehuda in this braisa sufficient with just simply Rov? Now, if you want to even be a little bit more, I mean, the question is a strong question. If you want to even be a little bit more confused, if I may, in other words, what else do we know about Rav Yehuda when similar items get mixed one with another? We also know that according to Rav Yehuda, there's never bittul. So over here, in other words, the Gemara is asking about Rov, the Gemara is asking about Rowan, we can also ask even a stronger question, which, what happened to Rav Yehuda, who says that when similar items get mixed together, there's never bittul? Take that question, which is a strong one, put that one on the back burner, and the Gemara now is going to try to give answers. Amar Abai, so here's answer number one. Abai says, Lokasha, that's not difficult. As we turn to now, Ayin Tes, Amud Aleph. Hadidei Hadirabe. So the Gemara now is going to start off by saying that whether or not he subscribes to the principle of Rowan is actually just simply a machlokus between when he's espousing his own viewpoint versus when he's espousing his Rebbeim's viewpoint. The Tanya, the Gemara quotes a Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Mishum Rabbi Gamliel, Ein Dam, Mevatel Dam. Ein Rok, Mevatel Rok. Ein Mei Raglayim, Mevatle Mei Raglayim. So here we have Rabbi Yehuda saying it, Mishum Rabbi Gamliel. In the name of Rabbi Gamliel. Which now means that when Rabbi Yehuda takes his position of Min Bemino in a bottle, blood is not going to be Mevatel blood, spit is not going to be Mevatel spit, urine is not going to be Mevatel urine. Now Rashi over here, I'm not going to go through each one of them. Rashi over here goes, though, when are these halachically significant? When do I need spit to negate other spit? When do I need urine to negate other urine? See Rashi over here for a halachic description of when it's significant. But for our purposes right now, what we need to know is that when Rabbi Yehuda espouses this viewpoint, it's not really his viewpoint, but rather it's his Rabbi Gamliel's viewpoint. His own personal viewpoint is that the bittul can occur. And so what the Gemara now is suggesting is that Rabbi Yehuda's shita of min bimino in a batal is not his own shita, but rather his Rabbi shita. And we can also add to that, that if it's a scenario of min bimino, then we can also employ the principle of Rowan in order to be machmer. But Rabbi Yehuda himself would be happy with just a simple majority by min bimino. That is one suggestion of the Gemara. That's a bai suggestion. Rava Amar, now Rava takes the following position. In other words, let's not say that. Let's say Rav Yehuda is the one who always espouses the viewpoint of min bimino eino batul. And Rav Yehuda, therefore, would, in the case we just previously mentioned, if it was a normal mikvah, it was a kli that was tamed that needed to be tovled into a regular mikvah, so then Rav Yehuda would go back to his general rules of min bimino eino batul. And then Tosus points out over here, the question that I asked just a moment ago, don't we always say that Rav Yehuda says min bimino in a batel? So Tosus over here points out, yes. In other words, once we're operating with Rava's answer, which we're about to lay out, so then yes, we say that within Rava's position. Okay. So anyway, so Rava says like this: Bedelisha tochotar v'gabatame askinan de medina sagile becholduhu v'rabbanuhu de gazubahu dil machais alay v'lo mitvalo mitvalei. Okay, so the Gemara offers the following suggestion in terms of why this last case that we learned together may be unusual. Again, let me set it up. Rav Yehuda normally holds to the principle of ben bimino in a batel. Rav Yehuda also subscribes to the concept of Rowan. And meanwhile, in the Braisa that we just learned together, where I had a kli that was tameh, so Rav Yehuda says, if I tov in the mikvah, and there happens to be mechatis inside of it, as long as I have a majority of mikvah water, 51% mikvah water, that's fine. Why should that be fine? So what Rava now is arguing is that this case that we learned together is a really exceptional case, a highly exceptional case. Notably, the kli is only rabbinically tameh, not biblically tameh. How does the kli become rabbinically tameh? So if any one of the liquids that will make a kli tameh, now a mashke, a liquid, cannot make a kli tameh on a daraisa level. It only makes a tameh on a derabanan level. If it makes contact with the outside of the kli, rabbinically, the only part of the kli that's tameh is the outside, not the inside. Right? We've said this before. We've learned this together before. So this is tuma migabo, creating tuma in a kli from the exterior. It's only rabbinic, and only the exterior is tameh, not the interior. So therefore, when you told them the mikvah, do I need any of the liquid to go inside? The answer is no. What I do need is I need only the liquid to just simply hit the lip of the kli. A little bit, says the Gemara. So truth of the matter is that I don't need its interior to become to come into contact with the mikvah water. But the rabbis were concerned that if, let's say, I didn't just stick it in just a little bit into the water, I'll certainly get the outside of the kli, but I won't get the lip on top. So therefore, the Chachamim said, look, the whole thing needs to be submerged. But here, Rav Yehuda says, but I'll be lenient. Normally, I would tell you that the entire interior has to be mikvah water and only mikvah water. But over here, with a leniency, because it's only tuma migabo and not tuma mitocho, so therefore, even at a ratio of 51 to 49% of mikvah water to the mechatis water, so I'll be lenient in such a scenario.
How does the mechatis comes in contact with inside? Mechata is inside the keli, and keli is outside. We are concerned about.
Yeah, but he's going to be submerging it in the mikvah, and they're submerging in the mikvah, so the water of the mikvah is going to go into the interior. Okay, I'm a Rava. Okay, Rava makes the following statement. We're going to see this in Chulin. I'm a Rabbanan b'taim of Em, a Rabbanan b'ruba of Em, a Rabbanan b'chazusa. The rabbi said taste, the rabbi said rove, the rabbi said appearance. Meaning, categorically, three categories. And here's how they operate. Min b'sheino mino, if I have a mixture of dissimilar items, dissimilar in taste, so b'taima. So in order for bittul to be affected, you have to negate the taste. Min b'mino, if I have similar tasting foods get mixed together, and one is asr and one's mutter, so there, rove. I just simply need a majority. And hecha de'ika chazusa. Now, if what is critical over here is the appearance, like what we've been describing the Zrikas Adam, like what we've been describing the beginning of this morning, the mikvah water, where there we're not consuming, we're not eating the blood of the carbon. We're not eating the main mikvah. It's just a function of appearance. So then appearance, meaning that as long as it gives the appearance of the liquid that I need, so then we're good. Ad kan, that takes us to the end of the sugya. And we're not done yet, obviously. We have a little bit more to go. But that concludes our discussion of the principle of Rowan. Rebbe Yehuda, does he subscribe to the principle of Rowan? Let's go back to what we said yesterday. Yesterday, we had a really difficult statement presented to us by Reish Lakish, and that is that if a person takes a kezayis of pigel and a kezayis of nosa and puts the two kezayis in his mouth and starts chewing, so as I mentioned yesterday, I could have easily made the argument that you're now chayev two isurim in the Torah, and if due process, you have witnesses and a warning, etc., etc., so you'll be subject to malchus twice over because you ate the two kezayisim. What Reish Lakish said in yesterday's daf is you're going to be subject to no malchus. And it's predicated on a number of principles. One of the principles is predicated on asra safik lav shmei asra, that a warning out of doubt is not considered a warning. It's also predicated on the fact that what ends up happening is that you have a little piece of the pickle going to the nose. So you have a little bit of the nose going to the pickle. And so what ends up happening is that it becomes batal, it becomes nullified. And so now you don't have no longer have a full kezayis, because one iser has the ability to be mevatel another iser. That was the chiddush of Reish Lakish. When you think about it, you realize that's a really big chiddush. When we talk about bittul, what are we normally talking about? Heter and iser, something permitted, something prohibited. They get mixed together, and assuming that we have the proper ratios, the heter can be mevatel the iser. But over what Reish Lakish taught us yesterday, that's a really novel idea. The idea that one Isser can negate another Isser. And to that, the Gemara says it's not only a novel idea, but it's controversial. Upligi. That's separate. Meaning, that's separate from our current discussion over here. Right. Upligi de Rebbe Lazar. The Gemara now points out that Rebbe Lazar argues on Reish Lakish of yesterday's daf. He just simply doesn't agree to this idea that one iser negates another iser. Mitzvos don't negate one another. Iserim don't negate one another as well. Meaning, bittul is just simply not a construct when the two things are mitzvos, when the two things are iserim. Bittul is only a construct when one is iser and one is eter. Man shamale dama in mitzvos mevalo zu etzu. Let's analyze this a little bit better. What does that mean, mitzvahs don't negate one another? So hilohi. So the Gemara says it comes to the position of hilo. We know this. We've heard this at the end of Pesachim. We also do something annually to remind ourselves of hilo. So what we do is that we bundle everything together. In other words, on Seder night, we have a mitzvah to eat three foods. Matzah, Maror, Karben Pesach. So hilo says, so what you do is you take all three, and you make shawarma, and you put all three together, and you eat all three together. So the mishum shenema amatzos morim yochluhu. The Torah says that you eat them together. You're combining food. You're getting now multiple tastes coming into your mouth at the same time. How does that work? Hillel says I'll tell you how it works. Mitzvos ein mevatlos zu et zu. Mitzvos don't negate one another.
But this is after taking each one by itself.
What you're doing is you're taking what we do, and you're translating it to the Gemara. Hillel lived in the time that I'm explaining. Hillel lived in the time of the Beis Hamikdash. In the time of the Beis Hamikdash, each one of these foods is a mitzvah min haTorah. Good. So now you take each one of them, he put them together, and he would eat them not individually together, only together. We, our minhag is to take them individually. The reason why, Tosfos on the bottom, the Amud goes on to explain, is because nowadays the matzah is d'oraisa, the mar is d'rabbanan. So in other words, this idea of mitzvahs being mevatel zu, we subscribe to this viewpoint, or we may subscribe to this viewpoint, but they being that our matzah mitzvah is d'oraisa, and our mar mitzvah is d'rabbanan, we don't do that. Okay. It's subscribing to Hillel's Peshitta. Tanu Rabbanan, we are now on the top of Ayin Tes Amud Beis. The Gemara now continues the discussion.
I'm sorry, what did Ben Shammai say?
I don't know.
Because that's actually what Mashiach tells Ben Shammai.
Okay, I don't know. Tanu Rabbanan, we learned in the Braisa. Charson shel zav v'zava, pam rishon v'sheni, tam v'shlishi tahor. Okay. Izava is a man or woman who has a discharge. Right, they're a little bit different. I'm not going to go through the details right now in terms of differences between a man's zav discharge and a woman's zav discharge, but we also know that once a man's a zav, a woman's a zav, so they are an avatum, they are a source of tumah. Furthermore, we also know that the secretions that come out of their body, not every secretion, but the major secretions, urine, saliva, so the... I'll cap it at those. So urine and saliva. So the secretions that come out of the body also are an avatuma. So that means that if a zava or a zava were to spit, that spittle, that saliva, is an avatuma. Urine being discharged from the body of a zava or a zava, so the urine also is an avatuma. Let's say, back in the good old days, what they did is they had these earthenware bowls that they would use as basically toilets. So let's say I had a cheres, a piece of shard, of a urinal of a zava or a zava. Now, we know earthenware is very porous, which means that definitely, the toilet bowl actually has urine embedded inside. So, if the urine of a zava or a zava is an avatama, and it transmits the tumah either through maga or through masa, contact or carrying. So if I pick the shard up, what I'm effectively doing is I'm picking up the urine of a zav or the urine of a zava. And so therefore, the person who picks it up is going to be tummy. Here's what we're talking about. Is there a way to expunge the urine from the toilet bowl? Now, generally speaking, when we talk about earthenware, we generally say earthenware cannot be kashered. You cannot extract the taste out of the earthenware. And that's correct, and that's true. But over here, we're not talking about cooking. We're talking about urine. And yes, urine is a little bit warm, but in other words, the urine, we're going to assume for our purposes right now, is cold, and it can be, through a washing, through a good laundering, the urine can be removed from the earthenware. So the second time, only after the third washing are we now successfully going to say that the urine has been expunged from the earthenware, and therefore it's tahor. That's only if what I'm using as a detergent is water. But if I don't use water, but rather I use urine. Now, I've heard, no confirmation, that urine happens to be an excellent cleanser. You're right? Okay. So, but still, that's all well and good. But in other words, but in terms of urine having the ability to expunge other urine, so the Tanna Kamma is of the opinion does not work. It simply does not work. Urine cannot extract urine. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Amar Shlishi Afa Pishlo Nasal Lesocha Mayim Tahor. So and Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov is of the opinion that even if it's not water, even if it's urine, urine can extract urine from this bowl, from the cheres. Mancham le damer min bemina lo batel, Rav Yehuda. So the Gemara says now, who is of the opinion that min bemina is not subject to bittul? Rav Yehuda. Meaning, who's the Tanna Kamma? Tanna Kamma says that I can try to rinse it out using another urine, and I can do it once, twice, I can do it 10 times, and it's not going to be extracted. Why? So the Gemara now is suggesting the reason why is because the author of the Tanna Kamma is none other than Rav Yehuda, and Rav Yehuda holds that min bemina, if I'm trying to extract urine with urine, ain't no bittul. It's not going to be subject to bittul. Virimino, the Gemara now is going to challenge based on another braisa. Patient shetavu nida misito tahor. Let's say you have flax. The flax was spun by nida. Nida, it's the same story. In that a nida is tamea, and not only is she an avatoma, but secretions coming out of her body are also tamea as well. So that means that the urine and the saliva coming off of Anida is an avatuma. If, let's say, while she's Anida, she goes ahead and she spins flax. So if you were to take the flax and move it, so that is heset, and as a result of that, you're going to become tummy. Why? Because we assume that while she's spinning, she's licking her fingers, and the saliva now is going into the flax, and the flax has inside of it, absorbed into it, the spit of Anida.
There's no double suffix there that maybe she didn't do it and maybe it didn't stick around.
Okay. Well, hold on. The im haya lach misit, I'm sorry. Pishan shetavu Anida misito tahor. Okay, it's really important that I actually read the words of the Gemara. Okay, and so what I'm going to do now is read it again, but with a good correction. And then I said tameh, and in fact it's tahor. So good. I get to correct myself almost immediately. So if the flax was spun by the Nida, so misito tahor v'imayalach misito tameh. Mishum mashkepia. Okay, so, Ben, to your point, if it's dry, so then making contact with it, moving it is tahor. However, if it's still moist, so then we assume that that moisture is coming from the saliva that she used to put on her hands as she was spinning it. Rav Yehuda Omer, af harodvo b'mayim tameh mishumashkepia. And Rav Yehuda is of the opinion that even if you were to put water on it afterwards, it's still going to be tameh. The afilatuva, and even if I run a lot of water over it, it suggests the Gemara. Or if I add, the Gemara adds that point on. And so what the Gemara is really bothered by is, wait one second. Previously, when we talked about urine, so fine. So in other words, if I'm trying to extract urine from the toilet bowl with other urine, it doesn't work. Because Rav Yehuda subscribes to the concept of min bimino in a bottle. And if I use water in order to get the urine out, that works. And it needs three cycles, but it works.
Even
according to Rav Yehuda, because water and urine are not the same. Even though, by the way, I'm just thinking now out loud that earlier this morning we talked about water and urine being the same vis-a-vis toveling in the mikvah. Okay.
It's not a question of
the
bottle here. It's about expunging everything.
Okay. I just thought of that as well. Okay. But here now what we're learning is that the flax that's absorbed with the saliva of the Nida, so if it's dry, so then we assume that the saliva is no longer there. But if it's moist, so then we assume the saliva is there, and that means to say, of course, now that this flax has absorbed saliva of Anida, and therefore, by picking it up, moving it, you are going to be tamei. If I run it through water, it doesn't help. And the Gemara says, wait one second. In the urine case, running it through water three cycles helps. Over here, why doesn't it help? Amar Papa shani roke dikarir. So the Gemara says, well, spit is different because spit is very thick. In other words, like we said earlier, it's extraordinarily viscous, and so that means to say that as long as the spit is moist inside, so then it's going to be a source of tuma, and even running water of it will be insufficient. In other words, you have to let it dry. Once it dries, it no longer becomes a source of tuma.
Because of Min Rabino and Min Rabino, what is the difference between Rabbi Yehuda's opinion and Rabbi Gamliel? Is the same?
Well, earlier the Gemara said Rabbi Yehuda quoted Rabbi Gamliel,
right.
At least according to Abaye,
right.
Rabbi Yehuda himself does not espouse to that viewpoint. That was what Abaye suggested earlier. But that, in other words, he was only quoting his Rebbe when he says it. But as we pointed out, in other words, Rav is of the opinion that no distinction to be made. It's Rabbi Gamliel's opinion. It's also Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. And the case under discussion was just simply a different case. It was an unusual case. That was the other approach of the Gemara. That's Rav's approach. Okay. And whenever we say that Rav Yehuda says min bimino in a bottle, so Tosfos says that we're subscribing to Rava's approach, not Abai's approach.
So according to Rava, that Rav Yehuda and Rav Gamliel are the same, and we say Rav Gamliel takes, is that, becomes halacha. Is that true?
No. Not in this regard, no. Okay.